FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. Starting us off tomorrow, Queen's Football will be hosting their annual Gales Tackle Hunger Initiative from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Metro Grocery Store at 310 Berry Street. Members of the Queen's Football program will be in person outside the Metro Grocery Store, collecting food and donations in support of partners in Mission Food Bank. The annual Gales Tackle Hunger Initiative, scheduled leading up to Thanksgiving weekend, is a priority event for the program. I sat down with Nick Liberatore, kicking coach with the Gales, to chat about this year's event. To start us off, I was wondering if you'd like to just introduce yourself for our listeners.
Certainly. So my name is Nick Liberatore, and I'm the kicking coach and community engagement coordinator with the Queens football team.
Yeah, so we're coming up to the annual Gales Tackle Hunger event on Thursday, October 10th. Nick, is this your first time participating, or is this sort of a new event for you as well?
So this is an event that we've done now for several years with the football program, and we do it every just before every Thanksgiving to help acquire donations and support those in need in our community, just as a way of giving back. We have so much support from the Queens community and the Kingston community in general, that, you know, this is just one small way that we can help give back to others and have a really positive event in the community.
Awesome. Yeah. And you got into this a bit, but could you speak a bit to the importance of our Gales football team being involved in the community with initiatives like this?
Yeah, absolutely. So our number one team goal, our number one program goal is to be the most respected team on campus and in the community. So that's above any of the on-field goals or anything that we have. This not only helps our players buy into giving back and being involved in the community that gives us so much support, but it also is a transformational experience and helps develop qualities in our student athletes that they can use for the rest of their lives and help set them up for success. It also is obviously just, again, a great way for us to give back to others in our community that support our team and offer us so much here at Queen's. So we're very fortunate, and we're very happy that this is our number one team goal, and the players do a great job in participating in these events.
Awesome. Yeah. And we're coming up to the event as of this airing. It will be happening tomorrow. How are you guys feeling coming up to the event?
The guys are excited. We get a lot of participation from our student athletes. They bring a lot of energy. So every year it's, we see so many smiling faces and people that are just have really positive interactions with the football team. We bring a lot of energy. We really hype up everybody who makes a donation and adds something to the baskets or the carts. So we're very excited. The guys do a great job with it.
Good stuff. And how can folks participate on Thursday or otherwise get involved?
So this Thursday we'll be at Metro 310 Berry Street collecting donations. We have several items that are in need. So for example, pasta sauce, canned meat and fish, peanut butter, baby food, diapers, stews and canned tomatoes, fruit juice, diapers, and then monetary donations would be are also accepted, both on site and virtually. We have a QR code and a link that community members can donate to the food bank, and there's plenty of ways for those who wish to be involved to donate either items or monetary donations. So there's plenty of ways, both in person and virtually, for people to show their support.
Once again, be sure to stop by Metro at 310 Berry Street tomorrow, October 10th, for the Gales Tackle Hunger Initiative from 2 to 6 p.m. In a message directly from the City of Kingston, Thanksgiving closures and service impacts. Learn how the Monday, October 14th Thanksgiving holiday impacts services, programs, and facility hours for the City of Kingston, Utilities Kingston, and other community organizations. Starting us off, garbage green bin and recycling. There is no collection on October 14th. Collection occurs the day after your regular collection day that week. Sign up to receive collection reminders by phone, push notification, or email. Or get the free Kingston Waste app on your Apple or Android device. Kingston Area Recycling Center is closed on Monday. Kingston Transit will operate a Sunday schedule. Express 501 and 502 and 701-702 will operate every 30 minutes and Route 4 every 60 minutes. Kingston Access Services operates with limited service on Monday. Call 613-542-2512 for schedules and more information. Administrative offices, including Housing and Social Services on Montreal Street and provincial offices, are closed. Utilities Kingston and Kingston Hydro are also both closed on Monday. Utilities Kingston customers experiencing a utility emergency such as a gas smell, power outage, or water main break can call the 24-hour emergency line at 613-546-1181. Access useful links and tips to prepare for the long weekend at utilitieskingston.com, including information on holiday electricity pricing. Recreation facilities, the Invista Center and Arenas, Artillery Park Aquatic Center, Rideau Heights Community Center, Kingston East Community Center, and Culligan Water Park are all closed this weekend. Kingston Frontenac Public Library is closed, and services and digital collections can still be accessed online. Confederation Basin and Portsmouth Olympic Harbor Marinas. The Confederation Basin Marina office is closed. The fueling stations are open at Portsmouth Olympic Harbor, but the office will be closed on Monday. The Pump House Museum is closed throughout the entire weekend, and the Kingston Grand Theatre box office, along with the TED Center for Creativity and Learning, are closed on Monday. Once again, that was a message directly from the City of Kingston on the October 14th Thanksgiving holiday service impacts. In another message directly from the City of Kingston, the city is seeking applications for municipal committees, boards, and commissions. Help shape tomorrow today. Share your perspective, help guide decisions, and contribute to Kingston's future by working with other enthusiastic community and city council members on a municipal advisory committee, board, or commission. From October 8th to 25th, eligible residents are encouraged to submit applications to serve on the following committees: Appeals Committee, Arts and Culture Advisory Committee, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Advisory Committee, Housing and Homelessness Advisory Committee, Kingston and Frontenac Housing Corporation Board, Kingston Heritage Programs Committee, and many more. Those selected will play a key role in helping shape the direction of city initiatives and services. Find specific mandates for each of the committees, boards, and commissions at cityofkingston.ca/committees. To be eligible to serve on most committees, boards, or commissions, you must be 18 years or older, a resident or business owner in Kingston, and a Canadian citizen or permanent resident. You can submit your application online at cityofkingston.ca/committees, by phoning 613-546-0000 to request a paper application, or in person at City Hall, 216 Ontario Street, in the City Clerk's Department. Applications close at 4 p.m. on Friday, October 25th. If you have any questions about the application process or committees, boards, and commissions, you can contact the City Clerk's office by email at cityclerk@cityofkingston.ca or by phone at 613-546-4291, extension 1207. That wraps up your headlines for this evening, and next up is your sports desk with Isabella.
Welcome back, CFRC listeners, to a Kingston sports recap. Bringing you the latest on Queen's Gaels, this week has been filled with intense matchups and notable performances across several sports. Let's jump right in. Starting with the football team, the Gaels faced a tough opponent in the Laurier Golden Hawks, falling 51-21. The guys put forth a strong effort, throwing for three touchdowns, but the team will need to regroup for their upcoming challenges. Shifting over to soccer, the Queen's men's soccer team secured a thrilling 6-3 victory against York University. The team displayed resilience and depth, bouncing back with a strong second half to secure the win. Now, let's talk rugby. The Queens women's team made headlines this past weekend, extending their OUA regular season win streak to an incredible 5 full seasons. On October 5th, they crushed the McMaster Marauders with a staggering 123-3 victory at Nixon Field. This win capped off an undefeated season, bringing their record to 6-0. Remarkably, they haven't lost a regular season game since September 2018, totaling a phenomenal 29-game win streak. Leading the charge in this latest victory were Kennedy Stevenson and Lizzie Gibson. Stevenson scored a game-high 5 tries for 25 points, while Gibson added 2 tries and 14 converts, leading all scorers with 38 points. This performance pushed Gibson's regular season total to 100 points. The Gales showcased their depth with multiple players contributing tries, including Madison Donnelly and Rachel Cullum, who each scored 2. The victory not only highlighted their offensive prowess, but also solidified their position at the top of the OUA standings, earning them a bye to the OUA semifinals. The women's soccer team also had a stellar match, defeating TMU Bold 7-0 on October 5th. Seema Sakharin was a standout, scoring 2 goals and assisting another, helping the team extend their shutout streak. However, the very next day, they faced the Nipissing Lakers and lost 2-1, snapping their 5-game win streak. In that match, the Lakers struck first, and despite a late goal from 2-1, and will look to bounce back. They now sit third at the OUA standings with a record of 7-2-1, and will look to bounce back. It's an exciting time for the Kingston Gales, especially with their homecoming just around the corner, but particularly with the women's rugby team setting such remarkable records. We're so proud. Stay tuned for more updates and make sure to support our local athletes as they strive for success this season.
Now for your CFRC weather report for this evening. Tonight we're expecting cloudy skies with a 40% chance of showers early this evening. We also have a low of +4. On Thursday, October 10th, we'll have mainly cloudy skies with a high of 14 degrees and a UV index of 3 or moderate. Thursday night, mainly cloudy skies with a low of +3 and a risk of frost. On Friday, October 11th, we'll have sunny skies with a high of 20 degrees. Friday night, cloudy periods with a 30% chance of showers and a low of 8. Getting into the weekend, on Saturday, October 12th, we'll have sunny skies with a high of 15 and clear skies at night with a low of +3. Finishing off the week on Sunday, October 13th, we'll have a mix of sun and cloud with a 30% chance of showers and a high of 14. Sunday night, we're expecting cloudy skies with a low of +3. That wraps up your weather report for this evening, and next up is your CFRC traffic report. Now for your CFRC traffic report for this evening. Pavement rehabilitations will take place along Highway 401 between Westbrook Road to beyond the Highway 15 overpass and on the Sir John A. McDonald overpass. This work will consist of various lane and ramp closures over the next several months. This week to look out for, Highway 401 eastbound at Highway 15, full mainline closure. This will take place October 6th to October 10th from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. each day. Gardner's Road and Sydenham Road westbound ramps. October 7th to October 9th, expect them to be closed from 12 p.m. to 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. Division Street eastbound or westbound ramps. Expect a closure from October 7th to 9th from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. In other road closures to look out for, Albert Street, Princess at 486 Albert, closed until December 31st to accommodate construction activity at 484 Albert Street. Beverly Street, King to Edge Hill, closed October 8th from 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. for a utilities Kingston contractor to reset a valve chamber. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th, closed until October 31st for buried infrastructure replacement. The road will be open to local traffic. Kings Court Avenue, Hillcrest to Kirkpatrick, closed until November 15th to accommodate a water main replacement. Union Street, Willingdon to Albert, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. And finally, University Avenue, Union to Earl, closed for the Queens JDUC project. In parking disruptions, The Hanson Memorial Parking Restoration Project is still underway and expected to conclude in late December of this year. The work will be completed in phases to allow the building to remain open to public parking. There is also parking availability at the Chown Memorial and Robert Bruce Memorial parking garages in the two adjacent blocks to the west. In other delays, Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl expect delays and closures along Aberdeen Street for a contractor to complete road and sewer reconstruction. Bay Ridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd expect delays while a contractor begins phase two of the Bay Ridge Drive active transportation upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles to Edwin to Princess. Expect delays while a contractor completes phase two of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford. Expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Motorists are advised to seek alternative routes. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. And finally, Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard at Elmwood. Expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roads, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road. For more details on any of these projects, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. That wraps up your traffic report for this evening, and next up is your CFRC Concerts and Events calendar with Noah and Victoria.
And now it's time for the CFRC Community Concerts and Events calendar for October 7th to October 13th. Have an event you'd like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us via cfrc.ca today. Monday, October 7th, Pumpkin Inferno Tours are back at Kingston Penn. Come visit between 7:15 and 8:45 p.m. and enjoy the sights and sounds of autumn, complete with pumpkin sculpture exhibits and spooky Halloween displays. The tours run every day until October 30th. Tuesday, October 8th, Terror Tuesday movie nights at Fort Henry return this week with The Grudge. These screenings include scare actors who will wander the grounds, amplifying your spooky experience. Bring your own chair or blanket, or take a spot on our provided bleacher seating. Doors open at 7:15 p.m. and the movie begins at 8 p.m. Wednesday, October 9th, board game night at Something's in the Water Brewing Company returns this Wednesday from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Admission is free, just grab a drink and enjoy the fun. Bring your friends and unwind with some midweek fun. Thursday, October 10th, Fort Fright returns this week at Fort Henry, running from Thursday to Sunday from 7:15 to 11 p.m. The Nightmarish Exhibition will turn Fort Henry into a den of Halloween frights. Tickets can be purchased online at forthenry.com. The Women in STEM panel runs this Thursday at the Kingston Climate Expo. Join us at the RXN Hub from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. for a discussion about women in the STEM field and hear voices from the community as they share their experiences and insights. For more information, visit cityofkingston.ca. Friday, October 11th, karaoke at the Buckle returns this Friday. Bring your friends and have a good time while you enjoy the spotlight, starting at 9 p.m. Enjoy the country music-filled evening, running every week on Friday. Saturday, October 12th, the Queen's Observatory has an open house this Saturday from 7:30 to 10 p.m. This month, come learn about the origins of the largest stars and see deep sky celestial objects through the telescope, weather permitting. The event is located at Ellis Hall on the Queen's campus and is free for all ages to attend. Tell Me a Story, a gallery displaying the work of Gail Williams, opens this weekend at the Melt Studio and Gallery. Come visit the opening reception of Williams' new gallery from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Melt Gallery. For more information, visit meltstudiogallery.com. Sunday, October 13th, the Kingston Memorial Center Farmers Market is back, running from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Bring a shopping bag and your friends and see what the local producers in Kingston have in store this week. Enjoy live music and activities while you shop. There's something for everyone here.
Have a concert in Kingston, an area that you would like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us today with details. Our main office line is 613-533-2121. This coming October 7th, check out the Kingston Jazz Jam at the Royal Canadian Horse Artillery with host Oscar Evans. Join them for a premier jazz jam sure to impress you. Doors open at RHCA at 4 p.m. On October 8th, Tuesday, the four-time Canadian Folk Music Award winners, Twin Flames, will be performing on Wolf Island. They're guaranteed to be an emotionally captivating performance, performing contemplative folk and rock and roll using Indigenous spirit flutes, traditional drums, and other Western instruments. Doors open at 7:30 at Hotel Wolf Island, 18 plus only. This Wednesday, the thrilling Japanese taiko group will be presenting Kaze, featuring a master bamboo flutist from Japan. Prepare to be haunted and amazed by the melodies of the bamboo flute as this group explores new possibilities for their art. The show will be held at the Kingston Grand Theater. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. Get ready for an amazing event. On Thursday, enjoy a free dreamy shoegaze folk concert by Alex Southee on Hotel Wolf Island. Doors open at 7 p.m. On Friday, catch the band Sweet Cheetah for live music at the Royal Tavern starting at 9 p.m. Free admission, or join the weekly live music at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar, pay by donation, starting at 8 p.m. Also on Friday, join the folks keeping the spirit of jazz alive in Kingston. Check out the Morrison and McAnish duo, performing a jazz concert presenting at the Kingston Jazz Society starting at 7 p.m. at St. Mark's Lutheran Church. All ages are welcome, and admission is by donation. This Saturday, don't be spooked. Bon Scott and Brian Johnson from AC/DC will be appearing via an audio-visual recreation at the Grand Theater for an all-out immersive experience. Catch it starting at 7:30 p.m. Don't miss out. Also on Saturday, coming from Toronto, Chasing Heroes, Sonic Souvenir, Max and his equals, and Mean Bikini are performing pop, rock, indie, and punk at the Mansion. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. and tickets are $10. On October 13th, the Doobie Brothers come to Kingston. Based in Northern California, their sound is authentic rock and roll with a hint of R&B, blues, country, and bluegrass. A four-time Grammy Award-winning group, you won't want to miss their concert. Doors open at 8 p.m. at Slush Puppy Place. Tickets go for $89 to $125. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at CFRC Music.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage funky one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present music from the Gertrude's new music video, Carry On, in collaboration with Josh Lyon, created through last year's Slate Music Video Program. This visually stunning video grapples with the tension between survival and resilience during times of crisis. Featuring a dance and movement-based narrative, Carry On draws inspiration from the isolation and loneliness many experienced during the COVID-19 pandemic, the climate crisis, especially the forest fire that engulfed much of Canada in summer 2023, and a tragic house fire in the songwriter's neighborhood. Check out Carry On now online, but also enjoy the music right here now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Burned up smiling, it's the hottest day on record. It's a summer that is coming, carry on. The hottest day on record is a summer that is coming. The house next door is burning, carry on. And put a smile on. That common sinking feeling when the summer break is over and you can't find any reason to carry on. That common bitter feeling when the house next door is burning and your life is of no value anymore. Better carry on. is here, and I know I'm not afraid. My heart is bare, and you can break it. Our love is here, and I know you're not afraid. My heart is bare, and you can break it. You better carry on. Summer day is over, and your life is of no value. Set the street on fire. Your smoke still lingers, burning all our eyes. Your poppies bloom from ashes when you set the night on fire. Your smoke still lingers, blinding all our lies. The neighbors burn up smiling. It's the hottest day on record. It's the summer that is coming, carry on. The hottest day on record is the summer that is coming. The house next door is burning, carry on.
CFRC 101.9 FM has new social media. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at CFRC Music and keep up with the latest announcements about our programming and projects. Follow us today at CFRC Music.
Queens alumni, homecoming is just a week away. Get ready for a weekend packed with fun, memories, and excitement. Whether you're looking to reconnect, celebrate, or just enjoy the festivities, there's something for everyone. Don't miss out. Find out all the details and plan your perfect weekend at queensu.ca/alumni/homecoming. Listen to Let It Happen on Saturdays at 1 p.m. till 2 p.m. for a little bit of psych, a little bit of pop, and a whole lot of rock and roll radio, blasting on that stereo. This is one so good, fun somewhere for you. And that's only on CFRC 101.9 FM.
All waiter.
Yes, I'd like a bowl of hot alphabet soup.
Hi, my name is Hayden, and I have a new show on CFRC called Alphabet Soup.
A bowl of hot?
Make sure it's hot.
Alphabet Soup is a musical variety show that's live every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m.
Make sure it's hot.
Right.
Okay, sir. Coming right up.
Tune in to hear something classic or something fresh. Tuesdays at 10 a.m. on CFRC.
Hey, Charlie, table 26 wants a hot alphabet soup.
This is CFRC 101.9 FM, your campus and community radio station, broadcast from the basement of Kerutas Hall, Queen's University, Kingston. You can also hear this program locally on Cogeco Cable, channel 282, and is streamed online at cfrc.ca.
Welcome to BioTechBit. This is your host, Krishna. Today we will hear a lecture on the topic Carbohydrate Quality and Human Health. This was part of International Symposium on Diabetes and Nutrition Facts. This program was produced and distributed by Toronto 3D. Before that, here are a few messages.
Tree Canada's National Greening Program is planting seedlings across five regions of the country: BC, the Prairies, Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic. They plant in areas that are in need of reforestation or afforestation across Canada. Tree Canada selects sites where appropriate native species will be planted to make sure that natural forests come back to life. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband Tom and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it.
So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
CFRC is active on every social media platform. Check us out at CFRC Radio on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and on Twitter at CFRC.
After a busy day yesterday and a late evening, to actually come here and listen to me in the morning. So that's a great, great privilege. So carbohydrate quality and human health. Does glycemic index deserve a place at the table with whole grains and fiber? Here are my conflicts of interest. As you can see, at the bottom are my main conflicts. My wife, Alexandra, who's a scientist at Inquest, and my two daughters, Wendy and Amy, who are here in the audience, fortunately, who write books and make money from them, I hope. Although they're not shaking their heads on that one. Dad has always been part of the treatment plan. Sorry, this seems to move on its own. Treatment plan in the Indian Adivik medicine, Chinese traditional medicine, with an emphasis on fruit, vegetables, and complex carbohydrates. So that's not new. In the West, carbohydrates part of the diet was emphasized by the leaders of nutrition fashion in the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries. And I think it's worth just mentioning these people because I think they're great exemplars of people who had foresight. The first is the Reverend Sylvester Graham, 1794 to 1851. He was a Presbyterian minister, a major advocate for both plant-based diets and for good bread. He didn't invent the cracker named after him, the Graham cracker, but believed in consumption of unmodified whole wheat products. He was also a leader in the temperance movement for physical and spiritual health. So I think that the interest of the of nutrition in its full sense and its environmental sense started coming at that point. Ellen G. White is the next great person, I think. 1827 to 1915, was co-founder of the Seventh-day Adventist Church movement. She promoted vegetarianism and paid for John H. Kellogg's medical training. She wrote much on plant-based diets for health and humanity, diet and the environment. Lived for 9 years in Australia, founded the Sanitarium Vegetarian Food Company and the production of Weetabix and Vegemite. So she really had a broad career and a broad impact. And then, of course, there's John Harvey Kellogg himself, director of the Sanitarium at Battle Creek, that was a large and fashionable health resort, promoted plant-based foods, cereal foods, e.g. All Bran, and colonic health. The Sanitarium entertained many well-known people, Teddy Roosevelt, Bernard Shaw, and other notables, and was the first to produce cereals for widespread distribution. So that, I think, is where our beginnings in carbohydrates started. New draft guidelines, WHO guidelines in 1922, gave a grade of moderate certainty to this, but it was the key part of their guideline. Eat more whole grains, vegetables and fruit, legumes, to reduce the risk of all-cause mortality and major non-communicable diseases. When one looks at it, it's not that different from what was being said 200 years ago. So that's interesting. Their evidence was not based on just looking at local people and working out what was happening. But the evidence from systematic reviews, randomized controlled trials, and prospective observational studies conducted in adults found that the higher dietary fiber intake would lead to small reductions in various measures of body fatness, moderate to high degree of certainty, and is associated with reduced risk of developing and or dying from cardiovascular diseases, type 2 diabetes and cancer, all moderate certainty evidence. Similar higher consumption of whole grains, vegetables, fruits, and pulses are associated with a reduced risk of developing or dying from cardiovascular diseases, moderate certainty. Unfortunately, no mention of the history and culture, just facts and grade. So I do think that it doesn't sort of fill the bill of where nutrition is going, but nevertheless, it's based on solid science. Statistical science, I have to say, not nutritional science. So the WHO conclusions are based on a meta-analysis of Reddins et al., and their data showed quite nicely the dose response that one saw for all-cause mortality, coronary heart disease incidence, type 2 diabetes, colorectal cancer, with dietary fiber. So dietary fiber did all these things, and the analysis was large. They had over 68, nearly 70,000 deaths on which to base this. So again, this good, solid science that we're very proud of. And for whole grains, same sort of effects. This time, even more deaths, nearly 90,000 deaths in this meta-analysis. So showing the data quite clearly. It's interesting that when we talk about dietary fiber and whole grains, we talk about them as three words. Are they all the same? What is fiber? Is it just one particular component, one compound? It's found in many foods, wheat, cabbage, beans. Are they all the same? No, they're very different structure. Some viscous, some insoluble, some soluble. Was a fiber expert consulted, one wants to know. What would Peter Ellis, for example, have said to the combination of fiber put in this particular way. I think it's very easy for people who aren't deeply embedded in nutrition to talk about fiber. It's much more difficult for those who've got some nutritional knowledge to talk about one thing when you talk about fiber. So early on, we showed that some fibers reduced LDL and some increased fecal bulk. So if you take the more viscous fibers, the guar and the pectin, the percent increase in fecal weight is very little. If you took the change in total cholesterol, then they have a big effect and no effect on fecal bulk, which is well illustrated by carrot, cabbage, and bran fiber. But yet these things are all classed as one, interestingly, should they? What about whole grain, a food that's milled, a flour, or an intact grain, or both? It's called whole grain. So one assumes it's a grain that's whole. Or is it just the whole of the grain? FDA may allow just over 50% of whole grain to call itself whole grain. So it doesn't have to be all whole grain if it is whole grain. And then what about the grains? We looked at the glycemic indices of bread made from milled leavened white flour on the top, then bread made from milled leavened wheat flour, then leavened wholemeal flour, then bread made from whole kernels and milled flour, parboiled, lightly milled, cracked rice, cracked grain rather, wheat, whole grain, the intact grain that is, and then two sets of whole grain. And depending on the nature of the whole grain, one saw very different with wheat kernels versus rye kernels versus bulgur, pumpernickel bread, wholemeal rye bread, whole wheat bread, and white bread. All of these, if you look at the end, have different glycemic indices ranging from 100 or 96 right the way down to 47. So the big difference is, so we think that one perhaps should be more careful when one talks about fiber and whole grain, and one would like to see what the effects were when one divided them into different sorts of fiber and whole grain. Are we actually covering up a lot of very different benefits? That's, I think, the concern. Anyway, should we be talking about whole grain versus whole grain flour? What's the new HUE evidence, the new World Health Organization evidence? Well, that was on the glycemic index and glycemic load. Although evidence for low glycemic index and glycemic load was reviewed, there was little consistency observed in benefit or mortality or non-communicable disease incidence from observational studies, very low to moderate certainty evidence, and little to no improvement in cardiovascular risk factors observed in randomized controlled trials, obviously short. And this was classed as very low to high certainty evidence. My friends, that is the extreme of the grade system. And yet it says consistent. So I'm a little worried about the WHO evidence. It seems to be underselling things a little bit and promoting certain things, but not giving the originators in the 18th and 17th century any credit. So, what about the GI and the effects? Well, as you can see, there's not much in the way of dose response. Perhaps a little for diabetes type 2. But if you remember, the number of deaths that we saw for whole wheat was around about 90,000 and about 80,000 for fiber. The total deaths in this cohort of meta-analysis, rather not cohort in this meta-analysis, was just 7,699, so about a tenth. So we really they're basing their evidence on not too many studies. So I have a few criticisms of this. Perhaps I think the interesting thing is there a mechanism for postprandial glycemia? And I think one of the nice things that one sees here is a study showing quite nicely the effect of a pulsed, a clamp study, where twice during the clamp study, glucose injections were made and the effects were seen on markers of oxidative stress. And this is in healthy volunteers. And what one can see in this publication by Antonio Cirillo, well known in this field, is you can see at the top the pulse in glycemia over the period, and then underneath you see flow-mediated vasodilatation, and you can see that that's impaired unless you've injected vitamin C, in other words, they had an infusion of C to correct the oxidative stress. And at the bottom, you can see nitrotyrosine as a marker of oxidative stress, also rising in pulses, unless you manage in these diabetic patients and to infuse them with vitamin C. And the effect is much less marked in diabetes because the vitamin C fails in this situation to suppress the impairment of flow-mediated vasodilatation and the rise in nitrotyrosine. So I think this is a very nice experiment showing that an antioxidant effect is important and oxidative stress can be induced by rises in glycemia. And here, a study by Monnier, again, following on with this work, showed that this is continuous glucose monitoring over the day. You can see the mean here with a couple of meals. And what they looked at was they looked at what the effects were of those who had the greatest MAGE, the greatest mean glucose excursion. And the results of this were interesting because here they found that the rates of the 8-isoprostaglandin 2-alpha were directly related to the MAGE, the maximum excursion in glycemia during the day. So I think, again, we've got a lot of reason for there to be some potential damage when one keeps rising and falling blood glucose levels. In other words, when one gives a high glycemic index diet. So reduced MAGE, well, one of the drugs that can reduce MAGE is acarbose, the alpha-glycoside hydrolase inhibitor. And so what about the studies where acarbose has converted the diet into a low glycemic index diet effectively? What does one see then? Well, if one looks at the Stopnidum trial, there acarbose reduces postprandial glycemia, and one can see a very nice reduction in diabetes incidence. So one sees here a reduction in diabetes incidence in the acarbose study of the Stopnidum study. That was a small study. It's been criticized. So we have a much larger study. The study that was done in China on fairly heavily medicated pre-diabetic patients, the ACE study. And there you can see certainly on the left-hand side, the diabetes incidence, and you can see Acabose in control, basically over a six-year period. No effect on cardiovascular death, although I have to say the Acabose is certainly below the control there. And one of the arguments is that when you get cardiovascular disease after diabetes, it takes time. So that's perhaps the reason why over that very effective ACE study, they only saw the diabetes effect. But I think what one can say is that certainly looking at slowing the rate of absorption of carbohydrate does have effects in terms of disease incidence, diabetes in this situation. And Jeff, who's here, Jeff Lizzie, here in the audience, has done a large meta-analysis looking at the effects of glycemic index in various cohorts. Those with a better glycemic index and those called good glycemic index, in other words, where the correlations are greater than 5.5, and those which are not so good, the less than 5.5. And although the less than 5.5 don't show the effect that dramatically, it's shown very dramatically if you've got a good assessment of glycemic index in your cohort, and overall a significant effect. So as with the Acabose, so with the glycemic index. And finally, eat pulses. That's one of the recommendations, and it's a good recommendation. Based on statistics, based on cohort studies. But it's worth mentioning that these findings were found away quite a while away ago. Evidence for moderate certainty overall for a systematic review of prospective observational studies demonstrating associations between higher intakes of pulses and reduced risks of cardiovascular disease, coronary heart disease, type 2 diabetes in prospective cohort studies. There were, before the pulse statistics, quite a lot of studies showing that the glycemic index of pulses was remarkably low. We showed this, I think it was back in 1980, looking at grains, breads, breakfast cereals, biscuits, tubers, and dried legumes. And at the bottom, you can see the dried legume, which is the low one, and I think quite dramatically so, and very different from most other starchy foods. So we decided that we weren't going to beat the Reynolds paper in terms of the number of studies, number of cohorts, but we thought it would be useful to use some large cohorts, often because they're very well done, and it's easy to see whether there's anything that's different in that cohort. So we use large cohorts with a very large number of participants, over 100,000, to facilitate a more precise estimate of the treatment effect and so make it easier to assess the representativeness of the sample and to generalize the results. For the duration to be less potentially important, so if you were slightly shorter with a very large cohort, it wasn't so disastrous as if you were short with a small cohort. And to look at less common outcomes, heart failure and the mortalities, which are less common, but in a big cohort you may get them. And for uniformity in approach, for a greater number of individuals to allow characterization of that population. And useful if one wants to do participant-level meta-analyses. So we took the data from the Richard Doll Consortium and also others in the literature who had these large studies and had an interest in the glycemic index. And we looked at their data. What what one can see, that's just the GI pooled estimates from large cohorts for associations with chronic disease. This is GI, and as you can see, certainly with type 2 diabetes, only four cohorts, but a really nice effect and highly significant. And one goes down stroke, one goes down to stroke mortality, colorectal cancer, breast cancer, things that we looked at individually. And you can see that all of them tended to lie on the favors lower GI side. If one looks at the diabetes, we looked to see whether there was a sex difference. And as you can see here, we didn't see a sex difference. But it is seen, we do see sex differences in other outcomes. And then we did what we thought was more interesting. We looked at the direct comparison of GI with fiber in the same cohort, the same people. And we looked at what the effects of fiber were and what the effects of GI were and compared them. The black is the GI, the light is the fiber. And as you can see, certainly if you get down to the bottom, to the total, there really wasn't the big difference that we'd expected from the Reynolds meta-analysis. And if we'd looked at whole grain, the effect is very similar. So again, it didn't matter whether you were looking at type 2 diabetes, CVD, diabetes-related cancer. We looked at diabetes-related cancer or total mortality. One got effects that were not negative from the GI point of view by comparison with the whole grain. So I think that in conclusion, I believe that GI and GL, it would be justified to join fiber and whole grains for chronic disease prevention, and that large cohort studies will have a role in determining the details. And recommendations for the future will have to include cultural and environmental issues. Thank you. I think I've kept you for long enough.
Hello. Thank you very much, David. That was wonderful. And you've left us a lot of time for discussion. So do we have some microphones for people to ask questions or make comments?
I think they would have had enough.
Maybe they've all had enough and want to go out for something. Yes, over there. Thank you. Frank Hu.
Hi, David, thank you so much for this really wonderful summary of not just the current evidence, but also the history. So the comparison among GI, whole grains, and fiber, I think that's really important because those three concepts are interrelated, but they also represent different dimensions of carbohydrate quality. So I guess one question is whether any of those large cohorts have mutually adjust for each other when they run multivariate models, because that's the only way you can say whether GI is independent of fiber or whole grains.
Good, very good point. I think the majority of the studies corrected GI for fiber. Interestingly, only the Harvard cohorts corrected also for whole grains, but none corrected for GI. So we don't know what the effect is if one was to take away a GI effect, which one would see with fiber and one could see with whole grains too. But I think that's a really important point.
David, I have a question, if I may.
That's it, folks. Tune in for another round of Biotech Beat, same time,
next week.
You're listening to CFRC.